Hello everyone and welcome to yet another installment in the oneliner.com's infrequent podcasting schedule. I, as always, am Craig Eastman, coming to you from just outside Liverpool. And in Glasgow is, of course, Scott Morris.
Hello.
And in Brighton's Falkirk is, of course, Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
As always, a fairly ragtag bag of suspects to get through this week, so let's rattle on. Okay, first up, two things, gentlemen. Point number one is that I've been told off for swearing so much. I think it's probably just on the basis of last week's intro. So I'm going to make an effort to be far less fruitful in my selection of language. Listen, secondly, and perhaps most important, I'd like to have 1 second silence for David Carradine. There we go. If you want to tie yourself up... if you want to tie yourself to the clothes rail of a Bangkok hotel by your nuts and your neck, then you've got it coming, buddy. Terminator Salvation is the fourth installment in the massively popular franchise that launched both Arnold Schwarzenegger and director James Cameron to fame in the mid-80s. While the first two movies were both groundbreaking achievements in sci-fi at the time, the third, more family-friendly installment met with a mixed reception, many claiming that despite delivering a suitably bleak ending, the film lacked the necessary grit and, most importantly, heart. Salvation attempts to refresh the franchise by being the first entry set in the post-apocalyptic world glimpsed only briefly in the earlier films, with Christian Bale, the grown-up John Connor, now leading the human resistance against the machine empire which has enslaved humanity. It all sounds rather promising, but if the name Bale usually comes as some sort of seal of quality, be aware that another name linked to this movie most certainly does not, specifically that of director Mick G. Can director and Mick gargantuan prick. Can director and franchise rise above the limited expectations of an increasingly cynical audience, or is this mechanised menace soon to be consigned to the scrap heap of future history? Drew, what were your thoughts on TS?
Firstly, if people were thinking that the third film didn't have enough heart, McGee certainly wasn't among them, because he decided that what this new film ought to be is completely soulless. Whereas the previous three films were chase movies, more or less, with a central character who's, for whatever reason, was being chased by big stompy machines, and you'd care about him. G's Terminator Salvation is a bog-standard war movie with added bits. You've seen another film, so we'll go, woo, look, it's a Terminator. It's, unfortunately, it's just really rather dull. I mean, special effects, as you'd expect, are very good, but for the rest of it, there's just no reason to care about anybody in it. John Connor, instead of being the inspirational leader of the dregs of mankind that are left after the war, is just some sort of great super soldier who's just got to go and beat up a load of machines. And
it's a fairly easy remit.
Oh yeah, but it's not exactly inspirational, is it? Like, hello, I'm John Connor, I'll kill this thing. I don't care.
Is that taken from the script verbatim?
I do believe so, yes. I'll double check it back to you, but I think it is. And the whole thing has no heart at all. It's just perfunctory, and well, some of it is downright stupid. Yeah, I'm sort of trying to get ready for this, and it's just left so little impression on me that I can barely remember anything about it, other than that I just felt after, like, I wish I'd seen anything else.
Okay. I guess you could say that's a fairly damning insight.
Yeah, that's the impression it's left me with it. Meh.
Meh. Scott, would you like to add anything more than meh?
Well, let's get the good things out of the way first, and don't worry, it won't take too long. The guy that's playing Kyle Reese in this, Anton Yelchin, who is also Chekhov in Star Trek, I believe, if my memory doesn't fail me.
Indeed. You're right.
He's good. He's quite a likeable character, certainly far more than John Connor was in Terminator 2, and he's someone that you could believe would show up as Reese in the first film. So that's good. There's a couple of slightly interesting character designs with some of the new Terminators. There's one that looks like a strange kind of half-mutant Terminator, which is quite cool. You see it about twice, so it's not that cool, really. Danny Elfman's score's adequate. At least they've had the sense to have the big sort of stomping Terminator theme in it, which is, you know, expected from a Terminator film, but wasn't in Terminator 3. And Michael Ironside's in it, and it's always good to see him on the big screen. Right, everything else is terrible. There's just an absolute dearth of ideas in this film, and it's quite sad, really. This is the film you've been looking forward to since it was sort of glimpsed and hinted at in the other three films. It's supposed to be the massive Titanic struggle between man and machine, and...
yeah, it's supposed to be one big money shot, basically, isn't it?
It just feels somewhat sedate, and now I'm normally quite easily easily pleased, and one of the things that quite easily pleases me is massive machines stomping about ruining people's shit. And so this should have been a very easy win for film when I'm looking at it, but I find myself very frequently bored in it, and it's not a good sign for something that is essentially an action film. I'm not entirely sure. I don't really agree with John Connor being a super soldier. It's still falling back in the same boring Terminator franchise of getting a tame Terminator to help sort everything out in the end, which, if anything, this film should start moving away from that. It should start showing humanity battling and beating machines on their own terms, and it doesn't. It just tries to rehash as many of the things found in the last three films as it can, and it doesn't really work. It just shows up as a fairly horrendous mishmash of ideas that have been stolen from other films. Even its biggest set piece in the film seems to have been stolen wholesale from War of the Worlds, as a massive robot starts scooping people up in the same way that the tripods did in War of the Worlds.
Very, very like War of the Worlds.
It's almost identical, and when you start stealing ideas from War of the Worlds, then you're in trouble. It's basically completely redundant as a member of the Terminator series. It has no real connection to anything that's gone before it, and nothing that goes well, if anything does happen after it. It feels like a shot to nothing. It doesn't really show John Connor sort of coming into his own as a leader of the human resistance or anything like that. It's just a bog-standard action film that happens to have a CG'd version of Arnie in it at the end of it. It is simply people eking more money out of the intellectual property rather than anyone that's had a good idea for a film to make in the franchise that would further it in any way. It's just bleeding it to death. And I feel about this film the same way that I think a lot of people felt, sort of the hardcore fans felt about Terminator 3, which I didn't mind too much as a film. I thought it was okay. I have no real massive complaints against it. I thought it was quite fun, but this one's just terrible, and it makes all the rest of the films worse just by its mere existence. So yeah, thanks for that, McGee. Yeah, so I'm not recommending it too highly is what I'm trying to say here. I don't know if that comes across. Yeah, terrible film. Avoid it.
I have to say, just on the point of Terminator 3, that I saw it recently on television again for the first time since we actually all saw it at the cinema upon release. And I remember sharing your sentiment, thinking, actually, that wasn't so bad. It was a good laugh. But I can tell you now, with a distance of, what is it, 5 or 6 years now in between installments, from that kind of perspective now, watching it, it's amazing how bad 3 is. It's just, it's built on slapstick and pratfalls. It's absolutely terrible now that I watch it again, and I was quite surprised by how I felt about it this time round, so I certainly have no intention of catching up with Salvation, but there you go, it's McGee. What do you expect?
It's McGee. I didn't expect anything, and I'm still disappointed.
There you go.
It's not exactly a name that inspires confidence, is it? I mean, would you trust a Dr. McGee to operate on you?
It's a name that really inspires ridicule, surely.
Are you easy to anger? Do you often provoke people into starting arguments? Do you like hitting people with your fists? I suppose what I'm asking is, do you like fighting? If so, you might like a new movie that's out starring Channing Tatum. It's called Fighting. In it, Channing plays Sean MacArthur, a young counterfeiter who scrapes a living selling tat on the streets until, under the direction of a seasoned scam artist, he decides there is a much better chance of earning a decent living if he joins the illicit bare-knuckle fighting circuit. Surely with the suggested depth of a title like Fighting, that can't be all there is to it. Scott?
It is such an obscure title, isn't it? I mean, what possible intangible mysteries could it hold?
It seems to come from out of the left field.
It is, thankfully, far, far better than a film that's called Fighting. You would be assumed to be.
I would perhaps rather it be called Hitting. But that's just personal preference.
Punchy, punchy, kick, kick.
Yes. down and towards hard punch.
There's not an awful lot more to it than what you say there. Young fella moves to New York, gets involved in the underground fighting circuit, falls in love with a barmaid, runs up against an old rival from back home, and this is used as a pinning to hang out his backstory and give us a little bit of characterisation. It's not the most dynamic or original story that you'll ever see, but it does the job adequately enough. The relationships portrayed are believable, and the performances might not be troubling any Oscar boards, but they're all perfectly acceptable and do the job more than adequately. Some of the character development seems a bit bolted on, but not enough to really provoke any ire. In fact, there's not too many problems I have with this film. It does what it needs to do well enough. The only thing that I've got against it is that it doesn't do enough of what it needs to do. For a film called Fighting, there's not an awful lot of fighting in it, which you would think is one of its main selling points. because it's also its title. There's not enough of the fights. It does seem that young Sean, or the character played by Tatum, which Channing Tatum, what a name. Yeah, he does seem to go from the lowest rung of the underground fighting syndicate organisation, or whatever you want to call it, to basically beating the champion in about three fights, which doesn't seem entirely right.
Well, he's just good at fighting.
Well, that's true. He is a very good fighter.
Yes, it doesn't also just seem to happen in three fights, Scott. It also seems to happen over about 3 weeks, if that. It's a very compressed time frame.
Another problem I got with it is, for something that is supposed to be a blood sport, it's kind of supposed to be barbaric bare-knuckle boxing that people, these crime syndicates are betting on. It's all very, very tame and very safe. This does rather undermine the kind of elements of danger that they're trying to build into the plot and the character of these guys, when it doesn't actually seem like they're ever going to be in any danger of actually being beaten to death in a ring or anything like that. So that is the only thing that I've got against it. Other than that, it's a fairly reasonable sort of film in the Rocky genotype kind of style. It's not anything like as iconic as Rocky is, but it's decent enough and it's worth a look at some point. It's probably decent enough to warrant a mild recommendation at least.
Can I just ask what actually makes a seasoned scam artist the best person to manage a bare knuckle fighter?
Narrative convenience.
Ah, that's okay. Drew, did you get a chance to check out fighting?
I saw it with Scott. First thing I would say is that this film, just title-wise, it's crying out for an exclamation mark. Badly. It really is fighting. Exclamation marks. Fighting! It just makes it a much better film already. And I'd agree with pretty much everything Scott said. I just think, Channing Tatum he's not going to be troubling in the Oscars, but he's really quite likeable from the get-go. He's pretty good screen presence. When his merchandise is stolen by some hustlers on the street at the beginning of the film, you're pretty much instantly on his side and you're rooting for him to dish out the appropriate punishment to the responsible thieves. And throughout the rest of the film, he's likable and does a reasonably good job of making you feel sympathetic for him, so that's good. And it's certainly somebody I'd quite like to see again in the future, see if he can stretch his acting muscles a little.
It's more than just fighting.
Yes, but the biggest problem with fighting is that it's entirely hamstrung by its 12A certificate. Because it's bare-knuckle boxing, as Scott mentioned, it should be visceral and bloody. But
it's only a 12A?
Yeah.
Oh, good grief.
And that's the problem. It's not bloody enough. It's bare-knuckle boxing. It's flesh on flesh, trying to do as much harm to the other man as possible. And I do apologise for the pun. It just fails to pack a punch in that department.
Oh, God, what you did there. Sorry.
Yes. and that's all just... If it'd even been a 15, just to get a bit more blood, a bit more impact in it, it would have been more compelling. But it's worth seeing, nonetheless.
If it had been a 15, you could have had 3 minus A more fighting in it. Never mind. So there you are, if you need...
Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Actually, according to IMDb, it says it's a 15, but I don't remember it being a 15. It was a PG-13 in the States, so it's the same thing. It needs a higher rating, so they could have got more blood in a film called Fighting. It needed more fighting.
And they could also have had a sequel called Swearing. In 1637, mathematician Pierre de Fermat conjectured his famous last theorem, that no three positive integers, a, b and c, can satisfy the equation a to the n plus b to the n equals c to the n for any integer value of n greater than 2. Fermat left no proof upon his death, and it wasn't until 1995 that his famous conjecture was finally proven. At no point that we are aware of, however, did he build a room that would gradually shrink and crush its occupants if they did not solve a new logic puzzle every 60 seconds. Nonetheless, Spanish film Fermat's Room, or La Habitación de Fermat, places four unwitting experts from varying fields of mathematics in just that position, and has them hoping to stay alive long enough to figure out just how they ended up in this position, just what the great enigma their captor has taunted them with means. Sounds like an intriguing mix between Cube and Saw to me. Scott is going to tell us a little bit more, I believe.
Right, so yeah, as you say, four intellectuals receive a mysterious invitation in the form of a riddle that transpires leads them to this remote building, which promises to be a pleasant weekend break, discussing the finer points of mathematical theories and science and shit, each to their own. At any rate, things are soon not what they first appear. The host gets called off apparently to attend his daughter, who's in a coma after a tragic road accident, and not long after, the walls start closing in. Now, one of the central premises of this is that they've been invited under an alias, so in theory, none of the occupants know each other, and this is essentially where the drama of the film evolves, as each of the characters actually unveils who they are, and it turns out that they are not quite as randomly plucked from the populace as it may seem, and there is indeed connections between the four remaining in the room, and low tension develops. It is actually pretty good. It cannot possibly escape the feeling of being quite massively contrived, because it is, obviously. But as long as you can suspend your disbelief for long enough, then it's an enjoyable, well-acted ride. It's described in many places as a thinking man's Saw, which is a useful shorthand, but not a particularly flattering one, given how hard that series sucks. The tension, the drama involved here has nothing to do with the puzzles that are set, which are uniformly dull, back-of-reader's digest sort of mind-teasers, and it's got entirely to do with figuring out what's brought them here and how it informs how they can escape from their current predicament. It's well-handled enough. It has the good sense to be quite short and snappy, not outstay its welcome, and certainly any film longer than it actually is would have stretched the conceit to breaking point. It's possibly going to be somewhat tricky to track down, but it's certainly worth putting in the effort to find it. It's certainly a far more tense, better crafted, and better acted thriller than most. And it's certainly better than Saw.
There you go. Well, I'm intrigued. Sorry.
It's just good. Then I have done my job. My work here is done and I can go.
Sorry, it just come to an abrupt end. I got completely caught out. I have to say, I find the premise of Fermat's Room quite intriguing. I've had great difficulty tracking it down, but I shall continue to search, for it sounds right up me alley. Now, director Sam Raimi took a bit of a beating over Spider-Man 3, and while that movie was certainly a disappointment, the berating of Raimi seemed a tad unfair at times, given his near-flawless canon of previous works. Having recently produced any number of shitty horror efforts, Drag Me to Hell is his first foray back behind the director's chair, and, as the name would suggest, sees a return to his home turf of horror flicks. Alison Lohman plays young loan clerk Christine Brown, whose bosses doubt she has the nerve to make the necessary tough decisions to earn them some dough. Determined to prove them wrong, she denies an elderly lady the loan she needs to keep her house, resulting in the old dear being turfed onto the street. Unfortunately for Christine, her irate former customer bestows upon her a horrendous curse that will, after 3 days of terrifying torment, see its victim dispatched to hell to burn in agony for all eternity. Heck of a way to end the week. Given the tidal wave of less than electrifying horror flicks with which we've been deluged recently, is Raimi's return a welcome thing, or should he himself perhaps consider a future consigned to Hades? Drew, surely we can't possibly be looking at a horror film which is anything more than unremittingly pap?
Well, you would imagine simply by being a horror film that would certainly be the case. But fortunately, it's not. Short
what?
My... By not, there would be not a horror, though, don't you?
Yes.
My pills! Yeah. Pass! I need my pills!
Drag me... Are you dead yet?
Ow. Ooh, that passed. Right. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, Drag Me to Hell is...
Yes.
Are you being the goat from Drag Me to Hell? Because you sound quite like it.
No, that's... it has a goat in it. Truly, awesome, it is a great horror
it's
film.
It's got an awesome goat in it. It talks and chews people. It talks and chews people. It's the best of goats.
Oh, good lord.
There's no finer goat.
I would like to know more, but I've got a horrible feeling we would end off on an incredible tangent. And no, perhaps we'll discuss this after.
Oh, no, the goat's quite
carry
central
on
to it, actually. But,
fair enough.
Yeah, it's a plot-critical goat.
It is a plot-critical goat, because the curse is brought about by the goat, and goats in general, I think, but anyway.
Isn't it brought about by an old lady?
No, she...
She's an agent of the goat.
Yeah, she just spells or conjures up the goat.
She invokes the goat.
She invokes it, that's the word I'm looking for, Scott, thank you, invoke. She invokes
she
the goat.
She invokes the goat.
And
is it a totes my goat?
Yeah, she doesn't say totes my goat. Unfortunately.
Oh.
Never mind. That's what I'm saying, though, and if we can stop talking about goats momentarily, hard as it is. But,
fair enough.
Yeah. Drag Me to Hell is yet another film done a great disservice by its...
I'm leaving all this in, by the way. I'm not editing anything out. This one's going out very Tay style.
Cool.
Excellent.
It's like the Document 95 of podcasting.
I was assuming you weren't editing, that's fine.
Fermat's Room, Von Trier's Goat.
It's another film done a great disservice by its trailer. The trailer would suggest that this was a straight horror film, with both the trailer and by default the fact it was a horror film making it seem almost certainly terrible. And it was certainly saddening to see that it was Sam Raimi doing it, because it just looked like a bog-standard shitty horror. But fortunately we need not have feared, because it's a horror film in true Raimi style. And it's missing only the legendary Bruce Campbell. When in its tone...
Oh, is Bruce Campbell not in it?
No, disappointingly, not even as the voice of the goat. I was hoping for something like that. It's a hidden credit, but no. But in its tone and its humour and the effects it uses, you know, eyeballs flying across the room, things being jammed into people's throats, that sort of thing, it could easily be Evil Dead 4, bar the plot's different. And it's just, it's really, really funny. It's not at all scary. Although I did feel slightly unsettled at a couple of points, I think I must be secretly scared of goats. It's just really, really enjoyable. It's funny, it's a proper Sam Raimi horror, and it's highly recommended.
Good grief. I'm left flabbergasted. I'm disappointed that Bruce Campbell doesn't show up, isn't it? This must be Raimi's first film that Campbell doesn't at least cameo in.
Yes, I assume Bruce Campbell has actually died and we haven't been informed, because I can think of no other reason for him to not be in it.
Absolutely shocking. Scott, would you concur with this seemingly startling revelation?
Absolutely. I think the only important thing to point out about this film is the trailer will sell you a dummy. It does a Watchmen, as we like to call it. It is basically promising something that it's never going to deliver, although, arguably, given that most horror these days simply revolves around the sudden orchestral stabs, and they're present in this as well, it's actually as good a horror as we've seen in the last couple of years as well. Other than that, it's absolutely hilarious. I mean, there's not too many films that will have me literally doubled up in laughter, but I certainly wasn't at points in this. It's maybe not as unhinged as frequently as, say, The Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness were, but it's certainly, I'd say it's at least as good as those films. It's absolutely hilarious. It's not in the slightest bit scary, obviously. So if it is that straight horror that you want, then you might not want to, perhaps not, maybe not want to avoid this. However, it is fantastically funny and I hugely enjoyed it. I can't recommend it enough.
Good grief.
Very funny. It has all of the classic traits of Raimi that made us love him in the first place. I would happily go and watch this umpteen number of times. I'll certainly be buying this one. It'll sit happily on the shelf next to the other Evil Dead films, which I will still break out every year or so just to give them a watch, because they've never stopped being funny, and I don't think this will stop being funny either.
I think
great film. Highly
I fun. Think people being savaged by goats and people gummed by old ladies just doesn't get old.
Yes.
Good grief. Does anybody at any point shout Yoshi bitch let's go?
No, alas, and there's no boomstick, but there is an S-Mart, I think, in the background of one of the scenes, but I may have imagined that.
Fair enough. Well, I can't believe that not only are we finishing this week on a high, but that it's what purports to be a horror-based high. I'm just having a quick check outside the window to see what the alignment of the moon with Jupiter is, because I'm sure something funny's happened.
Watch out for those horsemen.
Oh, good grief. It's either the start of a horror renaissance or the end of the world. You decide. Well, there we are, guys. We'll be back sooner rather than later, hopefully, with a selection of the latest outpouring of effluent to sludge its way into your cinemas. Any idea what we'll be covering at all, Scott?
Well, we, for the specialised case of me and Drew, will be back a lot sooner than me, which includes you, will be, because we're off to the Edinburgh Festival starting
on
in a couple of days. So expect at least, I don't know, 5 or 6 podcasts. We'll probably try and do a little more frequently than last year, covering the delights that await us at the Edinburgh Festival, where we'll cover very strange Korean films and stuff like that. So yes, look forward to that fairly soon.
Fair enough. Me, I'm Billy No Mates. Well, it's either that or Billy lives nowhere near Edinburgh these days. Billy can't get no time off work. Billy, his car won't take him that far anymore, I don't think, without falling apart. Well, there you go then. You might not be treated to my dulcet tones for a while, but sounds like the lads will be in your ear like, I don't know, a big ear invader.
Ooh, I hate those ear invaders. Of all the things you could compare us to, why the ear invader?
I don't know. I don't know what an ear invader is. Yeah, so there we are. I won't faff on any longer. Keep it real. I'll speak to you at some point in the near future. Those two shameless miscreants will be back a lot sooner. And can I just say, in tribute to Sam Raimi, I shall sign off by this week saying, let's get the hell out of here!
Oh, Charles Horty Skeleton.
Yes. I've been Craig. Drew was Drew.
Goodbye.
And Scott was Scott.
Aye, see ya.
Smell yees later.
Scott, just before you begin, I see you open a bottle of beer and don't want to interrupt you by hissing it. Thank you, carry on.
A veritable avalanche of noise it was.
Well, thank you for protecting our tender ears.
Pretender to Phil Spector's wall of sound thrown.